So Ian Matthew has guided us through John of the Cross, talking about the drawing of God, of us, into communion with God. And we saw a couple of days ago that this requires something of us. The ascent of Mount Carmel is the image John of the Cross uses. Dispossessing, letting go. And there's a lot we can do there, a lot we have to do. But yesterday assured us that actually the final, the real purification comes from God. And he talks about it in that very enchanting, complex image of the night, with all its beauty, but all its pain as well. And now we come to the last section. It'll take us 2 days. And Ian Matthew calls it encounter. The first section is the experience of God. And Ian Matthew, his stuff is in red. John of the Cross's is in blue and mine's in black. So this is Ian Matthew. He says, John's teaching has been directing us to, firstly, a God who gives himself. That's center. And that's expressed most beautifully in the flame of love, which we've played a few times. Secondly, John's teaching is directing us to the space that we make for that gift, God's gift. And that's the ascent of Mount Carmel. Then to the opening which God himself carves out for the gift. And we find that in the night, the dark night of the soul. And finally, it's a project which stretches from God's plan in eternity to its final fulfillment in heaven. And that is the canticle, spiritual canticle. And he goes on to say, believe, trust, love, and you are receiving the gift. Believe, trust, and love. Love, of course, give yourself, wherever you happen to be, your real self. When John seeks an experience of God, says Ian Matthew, he says what he means or intends by the word experience. He doesn't mean feeling, as opposed to non-feeling. So if you feel something, you're experiencing God. If you're not, you're not. He doesn't mean that. He means reality as opposed to mere theory. He's not looking for a shot in the arm to brighten a dreary day. He's looking for a person with whom he is content to be, even if the day stays dreary. And then sums up a profound Christian wisdom which has been there since the beginning, the three theological virtues. That's why they're called theological. Believing, hoping and loving are the only means. Believing, let's say more of this in a moment, but just believing from the English quite beautifully says to be in love. So it's believing is knowing in faith and trusting that knowledge. Got a million reasons to trust it. So believing is being in that love place. Hoping This is a bit tricky, perhaps, because the English word hope pretty well has got locked up into looking towards the future. We hope it'll be a fine day for your daughter's wedding. We hope it'll be something will happen. Hope means anticipating with longing and really wanting something in the future to be the way we want it. That's what I think we generally mean by hope. It's not what the Bible means by hope, which makes it a bit hard. Hope in the Old Testament scriptures, the Septuagint, and then in the New, means when it is pointing to the future, it means leaving the future confidently in the hands of God so that I can actually love now. There's nothing wrong with anticipating the future, wanting it, and there are other virtues along that line. But the virtue of hope is a trusting the future to God, knowing that the best way I can prepare for the future is to live now well, lovingly, in the presence of God. It's the only way we can affect the future, but it's the best way. So, back to his thing, believing, hoping, loving, they actually all come to the same thing eventually, to three different entries into the one thing. These are the only means, and they're the means by which a person is directly united with God. John defines love, says he in Matthew, as aligning our will perfectly to God's. This seems to me pretty wise. Ian Matthew says, in practice, what that means is not aligning it to anything else. I would probably myself, the image that helps me more than that, because that could create the idea you've got all these other things and you've got God and you don't line up with those and you line up with God. But that makes God separate from all those other things. You bear with me and you'll have a better idea yourselves. But my thought is, no, it's not a matter of leaving anything to go to God, because God is in everything. It's a matter of penetrating everything to the mysterious depth, not locked on the surface or holding on to the surface, but actually loving, going right through so that we're not possessed by what, but we keep penetrating the whole world, actually, caught by this longing in us that can only be satisfied with the infinite. By faith, we know with the Son's knowing. That's nice, having the mind of Christ. By charity, we love with the Son's loving. I live no longer I, but Christ lives in me, says Paul. He could easily have said, I love no longer I, but Christ loves in me. I know no longer I, but Christ knows in me. If you believe, hope, and love, you are receiving God. Whatever you might feel like. Ian then talks about the experience of God at another level now. In John's dictionary, faith, hope, and love, brackets the three theological virtues, the three virtues that come from God to us and unite us to God, translate commitment, above all, God's commitment to us. There is an excess of light too close to focus. Through believing, we possess the light. And I quote again that lovely phrase of John's from his poem on the sacred canticle, spiritual canticle. If only, he says, speaking to the scriptures, the New Testament scriptures, speaking of the church teaching, speaking of all the wonderful traditions we've got, a sacramental life, if only on your silvered over face, precious words that cover the word, hopefully reveal the word, because if only on your silvered over face you would suddenly form the eyes I so long for, which I bear sketched deep within my heart. Right from our mother's womb, God implanted in us this evolution, is it? At a deepest level, this longing for God. Longing for life, longing for love without limits, unconditional. We've all got that. And then those beautiful people in our life have helped be a sacrament of it, but they never fill it. They can't. Don't expect them to. The eyes are there. We will recognize them in our heart because we're made. You have made us for yourself, said Augustine. Our hearts are restless till they rest in you. John of the Cross has chapters on the subject of memory, and it needs a little bit of care in unwrapping it, and this is Ian Matthew's way of doing it. Memory, he defines, is the person's capacity to retrieve, anticipate, possess the otherwise fleeting moment as her own. It's the faculty not of possession, I'm sorry, it is the faculty then of possession, of self-possession, roughly corresponding to what we mean by consciousness. Purification of memory, John of the Cross, maybe we would be better to say purification of our consciousness. Night, he goes on, is a healing of the memory. It challenges the dominance of our memories over our present freedom. Night sets us free from enslavement to was or maybe. It liberates us to do the only thing we can do is live in the present moment. It's all we've got. And how easy it is for us poor human beings to implode because of the past or to be fearful of what might come in the future. It seems entirely natural to be like that. But the grace is all the time drawing us back to the moment now, which is where the past has brought me to and from where I can move into God's future with Jesus. These are John's words from the third book of Ascent. The build-up of anxiety or worry, which problems and crises can cause a person, in no way helps to bring about a better situation. Rather, it normally makes matters worse and harms the person herself. It's obviously never any help getting anxious. I've got this image from Centennial Park where I used to go when I was chaplain at the University of New South Wales. I'd go down there at night. Someone told me when I'd been doing this for about a year, that's a bit dangerous, but maybe it was, I didn't know. So looking into the pools this is my memory. When it was no wind, no breeze, absolutely still, you could see the stars and the bats and the trees reflected in the ponds or the lake, obviously. But when the wind came, and you couldn't see a thing. So when you or I inside are a bit like that, we can't see. So we can't believe, we can't hope, we can't love. We can, but where it's disturbed. So this stillness gift, it's obviously never any help getting anxious. Now Brian knows it, but to bear it all with calm, peace, tranquility, not only opens the soul to many blessings, it also helps her in these difficulties themselves to come to a better decision and to apply a remedy that will actually do some good. Ignatius of Loyola, as you probably all know, is very strong on this. The art of discernment, and that's why we make retreats often. The art of discernment. So if I went in to tell you a bit all about this, it'd get too complicated. But in any case, 40 years ago now, I was expected to leave the order I'm now a member of, because the provincial kept wanting me to teach. And I used to wake up at night, every night, saying, "Lord, what would you have me do?" Because everything in me was saying, calling me beyond that. So I wrote, poor provincial, he's got letters that big. But he kept saying, "No, you need to keep teaching," which of course I loved. I loved it, but I didn't want it. I don't know how to say that better than that. And I was peaceful. I got in touch with a bishop. I was given the possibility of going into another diocese, and I was very peaceful about it. But everybody that came to hear about it, everybody came to me saying, "You're wrong." And dear old John of the Cross, it's the first time he saved my life. He's saved it so often since, but he's got a wonderful passage in there. He said, "God will never tell you to do something unless he reveals it also to a wise person." Well, here is this self, whatever it is, motivated individual, peaceful, everything's fixed, peaceful, good, prayerful, but no wise person agreed. So I wrote back to the provincial, you don't have to hear, but I'll finish it now, I've got this far. I wrote back to the provincial and said, "Look, I'll stay here for the rest of my life if you do. I haven't changed my feelings or my prayer or longings, but I'll forget about that, I'll stay here." And then, thanks be to God, the dear provincial was so wise, I suppose he thought, "I've pushed this bloke to the end and he's fair dinkum," so he moved me. Had he not, I would have stayed, but he did. So why did I tell you all that? I don't actually know. Oh, the decision. Yeah, it's not just about being peaceful. It's about opening the soul to a director, someone else, who can help recognize it. And if no one does, keep looking. This is Ian Matthew now. He said, "Hope releases the soul's fluidity, not just from, but for." Freedom is freedom from, stuff inside mainly. We know all about that. But the key point of freedom, of course, is you're free for something. Free to listen, free to live life to the full. So it's the same here. God is the one to fill us. And we want to be free for that to happen. and John of the Cross has encouraged us to believe the journey's real, God's desire is real, trust it, go for it, and live to the full. John knows only two realities, the present and eternity. Hope pulls memory off the suction pad of yesterday. Pretty good image. And tomorrow, and cups it upward in the present. The sacrament of the present moment, it's called. Eternity is bearing down like an inverted triangle upon one point in time, now. In God there is only now, eternity is only now, and we enter eternity, participate in it now. Worry is not just a pain, it's a tragedy, because it absorbs in something else, something less, what is meant for something greater. Hope means easing the mind of what inflames it or frightens it and cupping it upward to the God who alone can fill it. Again, Ian Matthews' words, love is God's activity. Our love is like a kite hanging in the wind of God's love for us. Love is our spirit-given yes to the outpouring God. The yes of love centers me, unites me to him at my center. John's vision, John of the Cross's vision, says Ian Matthew, is a God constantly gazing at the universe, personally meeting the eyes of each person in the universe, with a look that, and now he's quoting John of the Cross, cleanses, makes beautiful, enriches, and enlightens. God's love is creative. It elicits and forms, taking her and placing her in himself, making her like himself. And our love is a yes to all that. We can hardly avoid the warning of Jesus could not go back to Nazareth in Galilee. No one could have said or showed all this better than Jesus, of course. And yet you get the impression that the vast majority of Jesus' contemporaries didn't get it. Paul picked it up astonishingly, intelligently, amazingly, great lover. And at the end of his life, he had a handful of Jews only that were with him, and most weren't. John of the Cross was locked up in a cell by his own monks. It's not looking very hopeful, is it? I've suddenly found myself going down a pretty murky dead end, I think. But in any case, so I don't think we should assume that we're getting it, that we must want it. And please God, we will get it. Get it. Say yes to this amazing truth of who we are. And we can help each other do it. Today, as you know, in the gospel is Lazarus. And only Jesus could give Lazarus life, of course. But Lazarus' friends had to move the stone and untie him, let him go free. So I need you, you need me, we need each other. The world needs us, and we need the world. We can't do it on our own, so all of it, the more of us do it, the more it'll happen. That we'll dare to listen. Here's John of the Cross, Spiritual Canticle, stanza 32. It reads, "You looked with love upon me, and deep within your eyes imprinted grace. This mercy set me free. Held in your embrace, to lift my eyes adoring to your face." The you, of course, is the risen Christ. And so the subtitle now, it's all a question about Jesus. I'll read to you from Ian Matthew, who's constantly referring back to the writings of John. "The power unleashed on John of the Cross in the living flame is identified as the vitality of the risen Christ. I live now, not I, but Christ lives in me." The letting go discussed in the ascent of Mount Carmel has one motive and model: love for Jesus Christ, whose only food was doing the will of his Father. The one who enters the space of the purified soul in ascent is named the Son of God. The one who lived God's life humanly to the full. And the desperate longing which fuels the pain of night is disclosed as a need for the Easter Jesus on the model of Mary Magdalene, anxious at the sepulchre. I remind you of that, I can't remember it off by heart and I won't do it now, but I did quote for you earlier the homily of Pope Gregory the Great about the year 600 on lovely homily on this Mary who searched, only found an empty tomb, ran back, told the disciples, they ran to the tomb, then they couldn't find anything so they went back home, but she alone stayed. She wasn't going to give up. She stayed and stayed and stayed. And so, says the Pope, she alone saw him. John of the Cross wrote quite a few ballads, romances. Many of them don't read all that well to me in English, so I just wish I knew Spanish. And if you do, go and find John of the Cross. They say he's the best lyric poet in the Spanish language, so how wonderful that he was also a saint. So I presume these read a million times better in Spanish than they do in English, but here we are, that's all I can give you is English now. This is a ballad, a romance, and what a wonderful image. He's imagining creation. This is very modern stuff. as the bride of Christ. You, yes. Us, yes. But this is the whole of creation, is the risen Christ's bride. And in the romance, the father says to the son, "A bride who will love you, my son, I seek to give you, who because of you will be found worthy to share our communion and to eat bread at our table, the same bread which I eat, that she may know the good I have in such a son, and that she may rejoice with me in your grace and fullness." And the son's response to the father, "I thank you, Father. To the bride whom you give me, I will reveal my splendor." That's our mission, surely. That all the scientists in this world will also be mystics. Wouldn't that be wonderful? All the people who architect our cities would realize what they're doing it for and make it an architecture of human beauty, not just practicality. But imagine that. Wouldn't it be wonderful? There are such around, of course. But the church, the disciples of Jesus, will never be happy till every technologist, every architect, every business person is a mystic. So, back to the son's response to the father, "I thank you, Father. To the bride, creation, whom you give me, I will reveal my splendor, so that by it she may see how great is my Father, and how the being which I possess from your being I have received. I will hold her in my arms, and she will burn with your love." Creation will burn with your love, and with eternal delight she will exalt your goodness. Ian Matthew writes, "That is who Jesus is for John of the Cross. As he begins months of isolation," referring back to 1577 in the cell in Toledo, "as he begins months of isolation and bitter disapproval, when everything, his body, his friends, his sense of purpose, even the God of his fathers, turns stranger. In faith, Jesus is the one whom John encounters at his side, weeping his tears, feeling his anguish, sweetening what is immeasurably bitter by his spousal love. I'll take you back to that icon of Jesus. And the text open in the Bible there, it's Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. To 30, a statement of Jesus that comes at the end of a chapter where everyone's rejected him, all the important people, important brackets, they've all rejected. He's alone, and he cries out to us, or to the people who are bewildered, following their leaders, but their heart somewhere else. And if you look at the eyes of Jesus, which is what you're meant to do with the icon, "Let Jesus look at you while I just read his words to you." And they are, come, this is the risen Christ, come to me, all you that are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you'll find rest for your soul. And that invitation is there every moment of our lives. Ian Matthew entitles this subdivision, Jesus is the experience of God. I find it quite beautiful, the way John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, in fact all the genuine mystics. Teresa of Avila was quite, I think angry is a good word, with her earlier spiritual directors. Because they told her, look, you've got to forget your senses, you've got to go into this mystic place, forget Jesus, because he's human, go into God. And when she writes her works, she won't let anyone follow the bad advice she was given. Never leave Jesus, she said. Two of the Spanish words that John of the Cross uses, todo and nada. Todo, everything. Heaven will be that, a total entry into the caverns of Christ's heart, an infinite space for the Father. Hundreds of years ago, I used to have this image, forgive me, but I just thought, oh, well, when you get to heaven, it's all, you finish the journey, then you're in heaven, that's kind of the end of the journey, and then you hear holy, 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 and it started to dawn on me that that sounds pretty boring, really, to spend the whole of eternity. You'd soon get sick of that. Then I read, which you all must read, of course, don't anyone turn you off him, Karl Rahner, undoubtedly the greatest theologian of the 20th century, in my view, anyhow. So real, hard to read, yes. Even his brother said he couldn't even read his German. So cheer up. But every now and then he's lucid and he's always wise. And he says so clearly, and I thought, of course that's right. Here on earth, God is impacting us, but we're distracted and we're this and we're that and you know your life. The wonder of heaven is that there is no more sin. There is no more distraction. So then we're free for an infinite journey into the mystery of God unfolding forever, and it can never get to the end of it. But there's nothing stopping the journey there. There is here, getting in the road. And that seems much more interesting for heaven. So that's what he says here. Heaven will be that. It's a total entry, not a settling, but an entry into the caverns of the heart of Christ. Infinite space there for the Father. Unending, eternal, forever and ever. Nada, John of the Cross's other favourite word, it's not enough for Jesus to have said night. It's important, in John's view, that he should have experienced it. He is our example and our light. And some of us may have been brought up on a distorted image of Jesus. It's highly likely. Where, because we were so determined to believe that he was God, which needs qualification, of course, but we simply put it simply like that, when Jesus was accused of claiming to be God. In John's Gospel, he says, hang on, I'm only claiming to be the Son of God. That was his claim. But anyhow, we were so convinced of Jesus' divinity that the light blinded his humanity. So he wasn't like us at all, really. in his feelings or in his heart or in his mind or in his will. He wasn't really human. That's the danger. And that was the earliest heresy of the church too, by the way. In the first, second century, who cared about another God? They had hundreds of them. One more. Jesus didn't worry anybody. But to say that Jesus Christ was man, really one of us, that was the thing they rejected. You couldn't have God dying on a cross. So Jesus is real. He wasn't doing things to give me a good example. His heart broke. He didn't know. He asked questions because he wanted to know the answer. He struggled because he couldn't see. So he knew the darkness, of course. On the cross, says Ian Matthew, the heart of Jesus became a massive space for the fire of the Spirit to burn, free to blaze out, more intense than all the fires in the world in resurrection. I don't know why I've been so spoiled. 59 years ago, I took vows over in that little novitiate where I now am. And I don't know why you're all not missionaries of the Sacred Heart. If you're in another order, join us, for God's sake. Because it might be all right what you've got, but I'm joking, but I'm not really joking. I'm kind of serious. Because what a gift to be taken to the pierced heart of Jesus on the cross. And to see that, the piercing, and out of the heart comes blood and water, the Eucharist, baptism, life, the setting fire to the world. Night, says Ian Matthew, means to tell us not so much what's actually happening in the night of the Spirit, but how it feels. The nada that John of the Cross speaks of is Jesus' emptiness. The darkness that can eat into human life with its threat of isolation, its appearance of chaos, has taken on Christ's contours. It's become a space, nada, no thing, a space for the Father to fill. John's vision commits believers to allow Jesus to work out his dying and his rising in their lives. And to conclude, it's Jesus' faith, Jesus' hope, and Jesus' love that are given me by the Spirit of God. What a gift! It's the flame of Jesus' love that embraces me. It is the spring of life welling up in his heart that wells up in mine. Jesus' heart is totally open to God. And Jesus gives me, each of us, of course, gives me his love.